What would it be like if more people used bicycles more often for errands, shopping, getting to work, and getting to school? What if you saw more people bicycling on city streets, joining all the cars, perhaps replacing some of them? What would motivate more people to use bikes? Would it be safe to have more bicycles competing with cars for space on the pavement? What changes in street design would help, or changes in human behavior? My guests today on Focus are all interested in more urban bicycling and making it work. We'll hear from Jeff Yockey of Champaign County Bikes, a local group working to promote more cycling for fun and transportation. Also joining us, Cynthia Hoyle, a transportation planning consultant who chairs the CU Safe Routes to School project. And we'll talk to urban affairs and planning professor Ralph Bueller at Virginia Tech about what other cities have done to make cycling work on their streets. I'm Jim Meadows. Focus is coming up after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. May is National Bike Month, and this Wednesday, May 1st, is Bike to Work Day in Champaign-Urbana. It's a good time to promote cycling now that spring is here and the weather is warmer. But it's one thing to enjoy cycling and its benefits, and another to make the case that more cycling benefits the entire community, and that community-wide changes to make streets and attitudes more bike-friendly are a good idea. And that's what my guests today will be talking about on Focused, the benefits of cycling in the city. My guests are Jeff Yockey. He's an executive search consultant and also the president of Champaign County Bikes. Cynthia Hoyle, a transportation and planning consultant who's been working with cycling issues, among other things, with the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District. And on the phone from Virginia Tech, urban affairs and planning professor Ralph Bueller. He's the co-editor of the book City Cycling, and that's published by the MIT Press. And I welcome all of you to Focus today.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us.
And let me, here's a question for all of you, if I can just go down one by one. Maybe you can explain from your standpoint, how does more cycling benefit a city? Does it affect the quality of life for people who may not use a bike at all? Jeff, if I could start with you.
Oh, I think of lots of ways that bicycling contributes to the quality of life in a community. And one thing is that it gets people outside and it slows you down. When you travel by car, you're sort of in an interior room. You've got your own radio. You can control the settings. When you're on a bike, you're outside. It's easy to stop and see what's going on. It's easy to visit with the neighborhood. It's easy to stay in contact with your community. So that's one thing I like about bicycling. It just slows life down, connects you to what's going on around you.
Cynthia, you're a consultant in this particular area. You're looking at whole transportation systems and whatever people are doing to get around. When you put more cycling into the mix, what does that do?
Well, it reduces roadway congestion. When you have fewer vehicles on the road, you have less traffic congestion. And bicyclists don't put much wear and tear on the streets. They reduce the amount of parking needed. It takes a lot less space to park bikes. You can put 12 bikes in the parking space for one car. It reduces emissions substantially. In fact, bicycling is the most efficient form of transportation in terms of fuel usage and emissions. So there are a lot of benefits for drivers. I think that we should all keep that in mind when we're sharing the roads. Roads should be there for everyone to use safely. The other thing is that having a community that people can bicycle in means that people of all economic levels have access and they can get where they need to go even if they cannot afford to drive a car. And transit, of course, is necessary in communities to provide that foundation for people when weather's bad, because most people don't like bicycling in bad weather. So having a transit system there that people can use when weather is snowy, cold, rainy, etc., is important.
Professor Bueller, you've looked at research on this in urban areas around the world. What do you find out from areas where they make accommodations for cycling?
There are many, many benefits. Many of them have already been mentioned by Jeff and Cynthia, but I just want to piggyback on this argument of cycling being economical for everyone. It's also very economical for the city government. It's much cheaper to build bike facilities than to build highway interchanges or new light rail systems, etc. So there's a true benefit to all taxpayers. And on the individual level, I think that the health benefits are also very very time you spend cycling to work is valuable physical activity on a daily basis, which makes you healthier and which may help to reduce public health costs overall. And then, of course, there are the air quality issues. If everybody drives, the air quality is going to be poorer than if more people are on bikes. So everybody benefits from better air quality.
Well, the subject today, cycling in the city, on Focus, and we welcome you to the conversation as well. To join us on the air, call 333-9455 or call toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. You can also email your questions and comments at will-talk@illinois.edu, and we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. I'm wondering, and I'm going to ask you first, Jeff, do you think cycling has actually increased in the Champaign-Urbana area in recent years, and how do you know?
That's a great question, and how do we know? Counting bikes is hard. I was reading a study in Portland where about 25% of their workplace works in downtown Portland, and they have four bridges, and so counting bicycles over that bridge has really helped them quantify that. We're probably a little bit more qualitative at this point. We see more bikes out. The university has more problems with bike parking, and so we know that bikes are being used more extensively. One tool we do have is the U.S. Census report, and they're smaller American community surveys that happen at 3- and 5-year intervals, and they ask a question about how do you get to work, and they give a list of options, and bicycling is there, and so that's one piece of hard data that we're able to recognize and beginning to see a small trend show up there in bicycle use in both communities.
Cynthia, is there any way quantitatively, any study or data available for this local area to be able to figure out how many people are using bikes and how?
We have been doing more counting of bicyclists. There are a couple of different ways that those are done. One of them is to train volunteers, and we have been doing some of that in the core of the community through our local MPO, Kuwatz. And looking at the census data, we know that for work trips at least, we're above the national average. We've got about 6% of our work trips in Urbana are occurring by bicycle. In Champaign, it's about 3%. So that nationally, it's about 2% at most. But, of course, that's just the work trips. We also know that there are some decent roadway bike counting tools now, eco counters, and they've been using them in Chicago. And we have purchased some locally to start using for counting before and after on streets, for example, where we have bicycle infrastructure that we're going to be putting in to see what the before and after counts are like.
Professor Buehler, looking at the national and global situation, is there reliable data on bicycle usage, and is it changing? Is it going up?
Bicycling is increasing in certain countries and certain cities. But before I go into that, let me just say that it's not atypical what we hear here for the Urbana-Champaign area. Planners tend to know a lot about cars because they collect the data. They tend to know a lot about transit riders because they collect the data. But planning for bicycles has been neglected for a long time, and so there's no systematic data collection very often on the local or on the metropolitan level. So many cities and metropolitan areas face the same problem as Urbana-Champaign does in actually having good data. On the national level in the U.S., the best data for the commute is the U.S. Census, and there we report a tiny increase from 0.5% of all commutes to 0.6% of all commutes. We also have the National Travel Survey for the U.S. that looks at all trip purposes, so not just the commute. And there we go from 1% to 1.1% over the last decade, so that teeny increases.
How does that compare with other parts of the world?
Not that favorably. If we look at countries like the Netherlands or Denmark that have a long-standing cycling culture, there 25% or 20% of all trips are by bicycle, so 20 times more than here. Even car-oriented countries like Germany, where I'm from originally, have 10% of all trips on bicycles. So the U.S. has room to grow. There are other countries that are maybe more comparable to the U.S., like Canada, and even they have a slightly higher share of bike commutes to work.
Do we know why that is? Is it why some in some countries there seems to be more people just choosing to use bikes, or perhaps policy decisions encouraging the usage of bikes? What sort of factors can you take in figuring that out?
Yes, in some cities or countries, there's a longer-standing culture for cycling. But even in those countries, what we see is if policies are implemented to encourage cycling, including bike facilities, such as bike lanes, cycle tracks, which are separated from car traffic alongside the road, or off-road bike paths, better bike parking, and other policies to encourage cycling, we see increases in cycling in all kinds of cities, cities with no bike tradition and cities with a big bike tradition. And, even in the Netherlands, like Amsterdam or Denmark, Copenhagen, they have greatly increased the share of trips by bicycle over the last 2 to 3 decades by implementing more bike-friendly policies. So, yes, there is a cultural difference. But the policies seem to be the main driver in attracting everyone to get out on a bike and ride more frequently.
And if I'm assuming that no one's making these people choose a bike, although it may be convenient in some ways, do we know the particular reasons why they choose to, say, travel someplace by a bike instead of a car?
I think there are several factors determining that. One is trip distance. So if you have a really, really long trip, you will likely not take the bicycle, let's say, 25 miles. Only very few people will cycle that distance. If trip distances are short enough, let's say 3 miles or less, or maybe 5 miles or less, more people will ride the bicycle. The other idea is that you have to have separate facilities that connect your origin and your destination of trip, like a bike path or a bike lane or a cycle track. Many studies show that people are risk-averse for cycling in traffic. If you look at who cycles with cars in higher volume, higher speed streets, it's mainly younger males. That's exactly what you see in Canada or the U.S. Only 25% of cyclists are women. In countries where you have these separate facilities, you have about 50% of all cyclists being women and a much lower share of male domination in that. So these bike facilities seem to make a big impact on how people choose to get around and choosing the bicycle.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. My guests are Professor Ralph Buehler of Virginia Tech, Jeff Yockey of Champaign County Bikes, and transportation planning consultant Cynthia Hoyle. And our topic is cycling in the city. To join us on the air, call 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Use social media, Twitter or Facebook. Contact us at Focus580. And I'm wondering, when it comes to the sort of things that make cycling more convenient here in Champaign-Urbana, and I should note that both Jeff and Cynthia told me they cycled in today, what makes it easier? What really helps on the street when you're cycling, just from your own experience, what makes it easier to use a bike on the street?
Well, being able to have well-connected street system is, I would say, the first priority. Being able to get from point A to point B by having more than one route that you can choose, and so that most people choose the lower traffic routes. When you get to the streets where you have more traffic, the majority of people feel more comfortable if they have bike infrastructure that designates that they are supposed to be there. So on the streets where we've had road diets and installed bike lanes, for example, on Illinois Street, they narrowed down the traffic lanes and put in the bike lanes. You see more bicycles on Illinois. You also see this on Race Street. The road diets that we've done also in town, like on Lincoln Avenue, did reduce travel lanes, but it didn't provide a space designated for cyclists, and so you don't see very many cyclists on Lincoln where they did the road diet.
Now, when we're talking about bike lanes, mm-hmm. I take it we're talking about the bike lanes which are designated by stripes on the road.
So yes.
There's nothing physical but those stripes separating the cyclist from the motorist, hopefully separating the cyclist from the motorist.
Yes, and I will say that for women, the research has indicated that they're more comfortable on streets where they've been separated physically from the vehicles. And I have many friends who have told me they will not bicycle on streets with vehicles. So in some places, they've started putting in what they call cycle tracks, or in some places, protected bike lanes, in which there are not, you know, concrete barriers, but visible barriers. And Chicago's been doing this. In some places in Washington, D.C., they did this. They put a cycle track down the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue, and I have used that several times in rush hour traffic, and I felt much more relaxed using that than bicycling in the heavy traffic in the city.
Jeff Yockey with Champaign County Bikes, what's your experience as far as cycling on the streets of here in Champaign, Urbana, or in other cities? What makes it easier for a cyclist to get around?
Well, first of all, I came from a small town and started bicycling when I was a kid. I figured up just on my paper route miles alone, I put 15,000 miles on my bicycle. And you add going to school, going to the swimming pool, hanging out with friends. I was doing that, and I was doing that in a small town. And I realized that I've had to learn a different way to ride here in Champaign-Urbana.
Which is a small city. It's not like Copenhagen or Chicago.
That's right.
But it's still a city.
That's right. Champaign-Urbana is – I came from a town of 5,000. Now I've moved up significantly. Riding next to a row of parked cars was not in my experience prior to being here. Having to be aware of a door zone. You know, some of the hazards that can come with a few more you know, vehicles around.
And a door zone, I can guess. Well, why don't you tell us what a door zone is?
Oh, it means you're riding next to a line of parked cars, and somebody has just recently parked, and they're ready to get out, and they throw open their door. And if you're riding too close to that line of cars, you could be in trouble.
And you never know exactly when it's going to happen.
No. And, you know, I go all the way back to even my defensive driving classes in driver's ed, thinking about scanning the horizon, being, you know, looking for potential problems, anticipating those kind of things. And so even though I would consider myself an experienced bicyclist, I'd gone on touring trips in college and all, when I came here, I took a class, you know, offered by some of our colleagues in Champaign County Bikes about riding safely in an urban environment. And I learned a handful of skills that really made it easier to navigate a variety of situations. And sometimes in a commute, 80% of your ride is in your neighborhood, it's where you're familiar, but there's a couple areas that are maybe a little bit more challenging to ride in, or you're going to a new area. And those skills have made me comfortable in a variety of environments. And so there is a role of bicycle education, and we are, in Champaign County Bikes, taking that that area is going to be a growing area for us to get more bicycle education available to the community and more venues.
Well, maybe here I can ask you a little bit more about the group Champaign County Bikes and what the group aims to do, what sort of presence you want in the community.
Champaign County Bikes has been around for about 6 years, and it's made up of a number of bicycle enthusiasts and advocates, as well as a steering committee made up of planners and professionals in Champaign, Urbana, at the University of Illinois, that are also involved in questions about bicycling in our community. It also has representatives of the bike shops and bike clubs and other entities in our community. So we're working to make Champaign County a very bike-friendly community. And because we're a unit, we can help resource and advocate for complete streets, for safe routes to school programs, to be available to talk to parents and talk about how these new bike lanes, sharrows, those kind of improvements work in our community.
Okay. Cynthia, now you've been working with CU Mass Transit for the last few years about efforts to make the area more friendly to non-car modes of transit. Why did they decide to include bicycles?
Well, everyone who rides a bus is either a pedestrian or a bicyclist on their trip to the bus stop. And so you have to be able to get to the bus safely and conveniently. We are a community that's not so large that that is as big of a problem. There are places in which transit has begun offering bike lockers and bike share because they know that having that increases the range of transit because people can live farther away from transit stops and still be able to conveniently access transit. So the leadership here in Champaign-Urbana has been very progressive in the transit district, and they knew that we needed to be advocating for safe and convenient ways for people to access transit, and that included walking and biking. And I would like to say, too, that bicycling is actually very safe. And those of us who do bicycling know this, who use bicycles to get around. But perception is almost as important as reality here. People perceive it not to be safe, and so we have to address that. I do the same thing with safe routes to school. Children are less likely to be abducted now than they were when I was a kid. Yet, if you're afraid of letting your child walk for safety reasons, it doesn't matter what the facts are. Your perception is what is important. So we have to address perceptions and give people opportunities to feel safe when they walk and bike.
Okay. I want to go to a caller that we have waiting on line one, and that's Paul in Champaign County. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Hi. I wish I was on my bike right now. But I wanted to emphasize a couple of things, and that's if you want to get people to commute regularly, it seems like you have to think of it as a systems thing. And in Europe, bikes are welcome on the buses and not just on the front, and trams are street level. I was extremely annoyed with the management in the town that wanted to put more federal dollars into a ring road rather than the tram that was investigated, I think. So when people make their decisions about how they're traveling, if it's reliable to get reliable way to get themselves and their bicycle home without being in a downpour in another means, that it makes the decision a lot easier. And I think that's why you need a broader view to the whole system. And town planning, putting a major development on the wrong side of an interstate is something that was done decades ago, but it's an example of some of the worst urban planning in the country. A guy who teaches at Harvard uses it as an example, I think. But anyway, I will listen on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. Professor Buehler, I was wondering, can you tell me anything more about mass transit working with cyclists in other cities? Is that something that's done in a lot of places?
Yes, it's done in many places, and cycling and transit can go together quite well. As Cynthia has pointed out, that the bicycle is able to increase the catchment area around transit stops. Normally, if we walk, we talk about the quarter-mile distance around a transit stop. That's where people would be willing to walk to a transit stop. But with a bicycle, you're faster than by walking, and you can live farther away. So transit can have more passengers if they integrate with bicycling. On the other hand, for bicyclists, transit can be an attractive option if they have mechanical failure or if there's a downpour or if other things are coming up. So people can actually bike some days and use transit another day to go to work. Some cities work, just going back to what the caller mentioned, some cities in the U.S. offer what they call a guaranteed ride home, which means you sign up with the local city government or the Metropolitan Planning Organization and commit to cycling to work a certain number of days a year or a week. And when you do so, you get, I think, one or two guaranteed rides home. So the city or the MPO would pay either for a transit or even a cab ride home to assure you that you will be able to get home. In Europe, many of the big train stations or transit stations have built bike parking garages. There's one large one in the Netherlands for 10,000 bikes, some in Germany for 3,000 bikes, and they are right next to the train station, so you can cycle there, park your bike safely, and there will be a guard, so nobody can steal it, and it's dry, it's covered, and you can take public transport. There are some conflicts, potentially, with transit and bicycles when bicycling and transit become too successful, because then you may have too many bikes to put on the train. We have seen that in San Francisco, where they have the Caltrain system, has special rail cars for bikes. But the demand for transporting bikes is increasing a lot, and they now face some conflicts about transporting people versus bicycles. So the solution there may be to build nice bike parking garages at the train stations. But it's more and more recognized also from the transit side that bicycling is an important access mode to get to transit.
Now, Cynthia, at Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit, as Paul, our caller, mentioned, you have a system where people can essentially put their bikes on a rack at the front of the bus.
That's correct. CUMTD was one of the first systems in the country to install bike racks on all of their vehicles. So they've had a history of trying to provide these connections. And when you have rail transport, then you have a little more space. You can let people take bikes on. When I was in Germany last summer, there were cars designated, and people would take their bikes and get on the train, and then they would literally, you know, I'd see them come up the escalator or step off the escalator, step on their bike right away. We don't have that here, but you can use our buses, and you can take folding bikes on buses here as well, along with strollers and grocery carts. So we do provide that interconnection and interface between the modes.
What do you see in terms of actual usage? Is this paying off for CU Mass Transit?
We have not done counts of people using the bike racks, but the rate of transit ridership has been going up. We had over 11 million riders on transit last year, and we've been setting records this year, and our winter wasn't that harsh. So I think more and more of the students are recognizing that they can choose a place to live here, and they do not need to bring a car anymore. You see the student parking lot off of Florida. It doesn't have nearly as many cars in it. And so I think we're seeing more and more people shifting mode, and in the industry we call that mode shift. And Champaign-Urbana has a high rate of non-single-occupancy vehicle trips. About 25% of all of our trips are by transit, walking, and biking.
Let's go to a caller on line two, Bobby in Champaign. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Yeah, good morning. I especially have a comment for Cynthia from MTD. I'm almost 70, so... I like to bike. I have a Tony, which is a great bike. It's kind of low to the ground. But I cannot use the racks because I am not strong enough to lift my bike onto the rack. And I would like to know why we cannot have kneeling racks like we have, you know, the buses kneel for wheelchairs, why there couldn't be some mechanism so that the rack would be lowered so someone like me could use the rack. So as a result, I now have one of those dash cards. I haven't even used it because I either bike or drive because I can't really interface the bike and the bus system. So, and I lived in Europe in the 70s, and they were light years ahead then. And the last time I was there in Germany in 2006, you see businessmen riding to work with their business hats and they're holding their briefcases, and you see housewives biking to the store. Everybody bikes there, but there is a bike culture, and it's better here than in most cities, but it still needs some work.
Well, I don't know if the technology to have a front kneeling bus exists or not, so I can't really answer that question. I can say that in recent years, the bike industry has taken notice of the number of people who want to commute by bike and interface with transit. And so there are many more lightweight, easy-to-fold bikes available now than there were in the past. When I bought my husband one several years ago, I bought him a Trek folding bike, and there were only a couple of manufacturers in the country. Now there are dozens and dozens. If you go online and Google folding bikes, you'll see that there are lots and lots of them available, and there are enough out there now that you can also, you know, get used ones. And so that's an option for people who don't want to have to deal with a heavier bike.
Well, I'm not going to buy a new bike. I really, really like my bike. I'm talking about... a fork that would go up and down, like the fork itself would go up and down. The bus wouldn't have to kneel. But it seems to me that that wouldn't be such, you know, maybe they don't exist, but it seems to me that wouldn't be such hard technology. It seems to me that would be easier than having the bus kneel.
Professor Buehler, have you heard of any device like that?
I was just thinking about this. I have not, and bike racks on buses is actually an area where North America or the U.S. is leading compared to Europe. So it's not that common in European countries to have these bike racks in front. You may be able to take the bike on the bus, which is accommodated by sort of having a low-floor bus, where you, when you enter the bus, the level of the bus and the curb are about the same. So there are no stairs to climb to get on the vehicle. But I haven't seen any innovations when it comes to these bike racks in front of buses.
But can you take, at Champaign-Urbana, you can't take a bike onto the bus?
No, all of our buses are low-floor accessible buses. The transit district here was one of the first ones in the country to have all of their fleet be accessible. And so we have excellent handicap accessibility. But there's not room on our buses to take full-size bikes on. As I said, we have pretty heavy ridership here. And so taking out seats to accommodate bikes is something that we haven't been able to do.
Okay.
Just one more thing. It would be helpful if there were places to park bikes that had a roof.
Yes.
That comes in
covered parking.
The sort of bike parking garages that some communities have, from what Professor Buehler tells
me. You can even just have a covered bike park. Many communities now will have covered bike parking at a bus stop, and that's something that the transit district has been looking at.
Even if something simple as a rack with a roof over it.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Bobby, I wanted to thank you very much for calling in this morning. And we're going to take a short break now and be back with more talk about cycling in the city here on Focus. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows. We're back on Focus on WILL, talking about cycling on city streets, how to encourage it and make it work as part of a community's overall transit picture. In the studio today, Jeff Yockey of Champaign County Bikes, transportation planning consultant Cynthia Hoyle. On the phone, urban affairs professor Ralph Buehler of Virginia Tech. And whether you have a bike or not, we welcome your questions and comments on the subject. Call us at 333-WILL or toll-free 1-800-222-WILL or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. National Bike Month begins on Wednesday. Jeff Yockey, I wanted to ask you about that and understand the general idea of encouraging biking, but this does sound more than the bike to work and bike to school day events. What do you do for 30 days?
Yeah, we do a lot. And just planning for bike to work day is a big task. We're expecting close to 1,000 riders on Wednesday this week to stop by and visit one of our 12 welcome stations. And so these are areas around the city close to major employment centers where we'll have a table and some breakfast snacks and have a T-shirt for those folks who have registered ahead of time and stop by and just sort of celebrate the fact that, hey, this is a good thing. It's good to commute to work. It hits on so many different levels. But one of the things Champaign County Bikes is beginning to think more and more about isn't just what are the needs of the current cyclists, but what about the folks in our community? And actually, the research is looking like it's about 60% are interested in biking. They're occasional bicyclists, but they have some concerns. And how do we help that group who may be even just slight recreationalists? They may ride to the park. They may go on a short ride someplace and back. How do we help those folks convert to utilitarian bicyclists? Somebody who will think about going shopping, running errands, moving their kids by bicycles. And so that has shifted our thinking to what are the events that that they want to be a part of. So we've expanded from Bike to Work Day one day where we're just looking at commuters, and most of the commuters are males, to looking at the whole population. So how do we get more kids? How do we get more women out? And so we've created a Bike to Market Saturdays. Four straight Saturdays, we're going to have a welcome station and extra bike parking and bike resources for those who ride to the market on the square in Urbana. And we're excited by that. We want to get more people to think about doing their shopping that way. Bike to School Day on May 8th. We're going to be talking to parents and welcoming the kids who ride to school. Out of that group of 60% that aren't doing a lot of riding, some of them never rode to school. And actually, some of our active cyclists, if you the survey data shows that they rode their bike to school and had positive experiences as cycling as children. So we're doing bicycle rodeos, events where we're giving elementary skill training to kids and their parents at several different locations through the month. It's those kind of activities that we want to reach a broader audience and encourage them in their interest in cycling.
I want to go ahead to get back to our callers. And on line one, Ruth in Champaign is standing by. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment as a lifetime woman rider who, A, I did ride to work, B, I went to college in Madison, Wisconsin, which in the 70s, to reveal my age, had a wonderful bike system already established around the Three Lakes. I would have always been frustrated in this town because we seem to do a lot of half measures. For instance, these new bike lanes on Randolph and State or on First Street, they're great as long as you're in between the intersection. You get to an intersection, and all of a sudden the bike line ends, and the cars don't know where you're supposed to be. You have trouble with where you're supposed to be. So I'd like to see that somehow addressed with signage. The other thing is I would like to see all truck drivers and all bus drivers made to ride a bike alongside a truck going 40 miles an hour or a bus passing them. I have a lot of problems with the way MTD drivers drive the buses around bikes. It seems pretty callous. It seems like they're thinking more about their schedule than they're thinking about my safety. I'm over on the right. I'm trying to yield to them, but I still have this terrible sensation they're going past me fast enough to, cause potential problems. So anyway, those are some of my concerns. I'm happy to see more talk about this, more consciousness raising, and see you bike is a great thing. So thank you very much. I'll hang up.
Thank you very much, Ruth. Professor Buehler, that got me wondering about attitudes of motorists and perhaps even cyclists as to what they do on the street. Is that different in other cities or in other countries?
I'm not so sure if attitudes are necessarily different, but definitely training is very different. And Jeff talked before about training cyclists, but I think it's equally important to train drivers. We talked before about this idea of having a door zone where a parked car may just open the door into the road and a cyclist may be hit. In driver's training in Germany, the Netherlands, and Denmark, drivers are actually taught to look over their shoulder before opening that car door. So it's not just about cyclists avoiding the car door, but motorists actively thinking about cyclists coming by. Similarly, as a driver, before you make a right-hand turn, you should look over your right-hand shoulder to see if there's a cyclist somewhere that may want to go straight, and you avoid hitting them. So I think training is very important, and then enforcing these laws. And similarly, if you talk about attitudes with cycling, in the three countries I just talked about, school children between third and fourth grade are taught cycling in school. So they learn in the classroom first about the traffic signals and about cycling, and then typically the police or a teacher would come and have the kids cycle in the schoolyard. And once they have mastered that, they take the kids out onto bike lanes, bike paths, and in the streets and cycle with them. So they set the children off to a lifetime of cycling by giving them the skills to cycle. And I think these training efforts will change the attitudes. And if you are a cyclist yourself, and you may be a driver as well, if you know both perspectives, you will have a different attitude when you are in traffic, because you know what it feels to be on the other side, and it makes for a safer traffic climate. And one last point on this is there is this correlation we find that's called safety in numbers. So the more people you have out who are cyclists, the safer cycling gets. And one of the reasons there is likely that the drivers get used to cyclists. They watch out for them, and drivers are more likely to know cyclists or be a cyclist themselves at other points in time. There are other factors that influence that, but the safety in numbers is very important.
Let's take a call on line two. Gary in Urbana, you're on the air on Focus.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Great to hear our speakers. I know Cynthia and Jeff have done a whole lot for cycling and pedestrians in town, and I know Professor Buehler's work as well. I do cycling education in the community, done it for the last couple of years. Just as a quick response to the previous caller, I've been here for 35 years or so cycling, and the MTD drivers, I think, are great. I've had no problems with the MTD drivers. They're professional, and so at least that's my perspective, that they're very cautious. Driving a bus on campus is really, really tough, and they do a great job. I just wanted to say something about safe cycling from an education point of view. I mean, there are three really important things. One, you want to be visible, lights at night, more generally being where you're expected to be, not on a sidewalk, not on the edge. You want to be predictable, following the rules of the road, communicating with other drivers. You want to avoid conflicts, get away from places where there's likely to be turning and crossing drivers and this type of thing. And I mentioned that because a lot of the bicycle infrastructure in the U.S. actually makes cyclists less visible, like behind a line of parked cars or in a cycle track, or put cyclists where they're not predictable on the right side of right-turning traffic and can increase the conflicts. There was a cyclist killed last summer in Chicago on a bike lane just trying to avoid an opening door and wound up under the line, the wheels of a truck. There are exceptions. There are bike boulevards in Berkeley I've seen, which are great with low-volume streets and low speed. I've seen right-buffered bike lanes in Los Angeles, a well-designed cycle track in New York City on 9th Avenue. But these seem to be, unfortunately, the exception. So I just wanted to point out that the cycling infrastructure really has to be well-designed. And the stuff that we have in town, some of it is not as well designed as it should be. I think we're going to be doing a better job in the future with some bike lanes coming up with John Street. Also on Main Street and Washington Streets, we're going to have some wide right buffered bike lanes as well. So just because you have painted lines on the road, it's not necessarily for bicycles. It's not necessarily the best place to be, and cyclists really do have to become educated. So those are the two things. We need more cycling education, and we need to make our facilities really well designed for cyclists.
Thank you very much, Gary. I'm seeing some desire to respond from our two guests here. Do you think this is a question that Professor Buehler should take up?
Oh, I'd love to hear what Dr. Buehler thinks. It is a multifaceted approach to creating a cycle-friendly community. Infrastructure is very important. As Dr. Buehler mentioned, as we have more riders and everybody understands the culture, it works well together. So there's a role for planners. There's a role for bike education. It comes together, and I'm excited. I think Champaign-Urbana is making some great strides in that direction. We're learning as we go. We're attentive to the research, and I think we've got some great days ahead.
Professor Buehler, I'm just wondering about the larger questions that Gary brought up, and maybe is there debate as far as which sort of infrastructure is best for what sort of users and on what sort of streets?
So that this debate exists, and I want to second what the caller said. The bike infrastructure has to be designed well. Just putting stripes on a street is not necessarily the wisest thing to do. In the Netherlands, they are using a selection matrix when they are designing bike facilities, and what they do is they look at traffic volumes, or how many cars or trucks are on a street, and they are looking at the speed limit. And if you have few cars and trucks and low speed limits, they say you don't need any separate facilities. Bicycles and cars and trucks can share the road. As traffic volumes increase and as speed increases, they say you need more and more separation. So the first separation would be the bike lane, just separation by a stripe. And then if traffic volumes get higher and speeds get faster, you may need other physical separation between the bicycles and the cars. And then the second point I want to make here is, and one of the previous callers alluded to, intersection treatments. And they are very important to assure visibility of cyclists, because that's where bikes may turn or cars may turn, or where conflicts may occur. And what U.S. cities are doing now and many European countries are doing is they put colored bike lanes through the intersection. Here in the U.S., it's a green color. In many European countries, it's blue or it's red, sort of indicating to drivers that bicyclists are coming through that intersection. And so before you turn, you will look for cyclists. And a second way to mitigate that conflict is at the intersection, cities are dropping the stop line for cars a couple of feet further back and allow the bikes in the bike lane to stop further in front. So bicycles are in the view of the driver at the intersection when the lights are red. And then when they start, the cyclists are in the intersection before the drivers get there, again, increasing the visibility for drivers who want to make a turn that they see the cyclists. But overall, no matter what bike infrastructure you put in, it has to be designed well.
Jim, could I just say quickly that I too have seen poorly designed bicycle infrastructure in other communities. The bike infrastructure here is by and large well designed, but it is incremental. And that's one of the problems that we face is that as you're building a system, you can't put it all in at once. You have to do it piece by piece. So sometimes people are concerned because they say, well, it doesn't, you know, do this or that. We are building a system the same way you build a street system. And so it is going to take time. And we will be improving the infrastructure as we move along. In regards to the MTD, I would also like to say that MTD has been very proactive in providing specialized training for the bus operators on how to share the road with bikes. And so I wanted to say that that's something that is heavily emphasized, and I feel that the operators here, by and large, are operating safely. And if they are not, then people should call in and bring that issue to the attention of the administrators.
Let me go ahead and take another call on line one. Frank in Urbana, you're on the air on Focus.
Hi. My question and concern is about the safety and behavior of my fellow cyclists. And granted, you know, a lot of issues with cars and trucks and buses, but also, too, at times I've been more endangered by my fellow cyclists, particularly people at night that aren't using lights, aren't wearing bright clothing. And I know that there's laws about needing to have lights, but I'm wondering if there's much enforcement going on. And as much as I'm not advocating for policemen to go out and particularly, you know, target cyclists, but I think something needs to be done to really get the message across that cyclists need to be responsible too.
That's the question I've wondered. Do cyclists and should cyclists get the same sort of rules of the road enforcement that motorists get?
Yeah, Frank, great question. I'm going to answer it kind of briefly here. Our communities are working hard to become bike-friendly communities, and we're anticipating a really hopeful announcement for Champaign that they're going to be recognized by the League of American Bicyclists in that regard. Urbana is recently, 3 years ago, was awarded a bronze level, and we're looking beyond that. And the University of Illinois is the only campus in Illinois that has a bike-friendly campus award for all the work that they're doing. But to get that award, you have to be working in five different areas that include engineering, which is the infrastructure we've been talking about, education, evaluation, how are we doing, master plans, bicycle and pedestrian advisory committees, encouragement, and that's what Bike Month is all about. And the fifth, these are all E's, and the fifth E is enforcement. And some recent developments have happened in Urbana that I think you'll be interested in. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee talked about this at large and worked with law enforcement. And so they've now come up with an ordinance in Urbana that can be used by police officers to cite really egregious behavior by bicyclists, running red lights, running stop signs, those kind of things. And in targeted concerns in problem areas and intersections, police officers are giving bicyclists tickets. Now, these aren't tickets that go against their Illinois motor, you know, as a driver, but they're a city ticket. It's $100. And you have the alternative of either paying that $100 fee or going to a bicycle education class, paying $30 and hanging out with some bicycle professionals to learn about correct riding. And so this is a part of creating a really healthy bike culture in a community like ours. And so we're excited by this aspect of enforcement.
I'm really glad to hear about that, because I've certainly, like I said, there are a number of times I've almost been hit by cyclists at night not having bikes. I mean, not having lights on their bike.
Mm-hmm. Well,
seeing that kind of enforcement would be great.
Well, Larry, Frank, thank you very much for your call, and I'm afraid that's where we're going to have to drop it here on Focus. Our apologies to the caller standing by. We welcome any additional thoughts that you have about today's program on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Our thanks to our guests today, Jeff Yockey of Champaign County Bikes, Cynthia Hoyle, consultant with the Champaign-Urbana-Mass Transit District, and Professor Ralph Buehler of Virginia Tech. The book he co-edits about this subject is called City Cycling, published by the MIT Press. And thanks to all of you for being on Focus today. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey and Kimberly Cronick. Jason Croft is our technical director and handles your calls. Tomorrow on Focus, we have heard and will hear a lot of news coverage about the Boston Marathon bombings and the continuing investigation into how it happened. But is the news media getting it right? That's a question for University of Illinois journalism professor Brant Houston and Bob Garfield, the co-host of WNYC Radio's On the Media, heard here weekends on WYLL AM 580. They'll offer their insights on the perils and pitfalls of covering this fast-breaking story. Focus is live each weekday morning at 10 with a replay at 8 p.m. on WYLL AM 580.